Okay. I'm up. Oh, there's everybody. Hi. My name is Nader, for those who don't know me. I think everybody actually knows me. And now I'm in the spotlight. That's great. This is not a commercial for HP, by the way. It's just incidental. Waiting for signal. That's right. Perfect. Perfect for where we are. Waiting for signal. I have four small-ish PowerPoint presentation I'd like to show tonight. So hopefully it will be stimulating and will be in color. Most of the pictures are in color, so that will be nice and vibrant, I hope. I wanted to, the four segments that I'd like to present to you have to do, on the one hand, just to give you a little bit of a background, because I'm working in elderly care now for some 10 years plus. And it's kind of interesting how I got there and what happened from there. Actually, the whole dementia, or as we call it, forgetfulness care, is really just something very recent that's happened in the last 2-3 years, because we were working with the elderly and more we saw these symptoms or these conditions. And so then we began to focus on, well, what is that all about? So I want to first give you a little bit of a background. There's some 30 pictures or so of the background. Then just a couple of slides that have to do with what originally we wanted to do when we started with elderly care, which had to do with redefining aging. So we actually wanted to deal with aging. How are elderly being viewed in society? Then a couple of slides on just how we then began in the last few years to actually develop a concept of what we call a therapeutic environment, within which anybody, whether you have dementia or forgetfulness symptoms or other issues that come, whether we are older or younger, doesn't matter, could be feeling comfortable and safe. And then the specialized programs that we worked on in order to help meet the needs of the elderly. And then the last part is actually longer, and we'll just see how much energy we have here at that time, which is a kind of a little manual of some 45 pages, actually, and I will not go through all the 45 pages. But the idea for that was really, what do we need to do to help train caregivers or staff or administrators who are working on an everyday basis with people with forgetfulness symptoms? How do we help them to develop a different attitude, a different kind of stance or position towards the people who show forgetfulness symptoms? So that is actually where the passion is at the moment. What do we do concretely for the people, that staff, that there's no training school out there, even there are no caregiver schools really in the US. In Europe we have actually the job of being a caregiver that has some training, but here in the US basically that's not a position. So having said that, everybody can hear me okay? So let me see if I don't have that remote which allows me to so nicely activate. So I'm going to rely on Salome. And let me just get the slideshow there. And you're going to go here and there. So, how did it all start? Well, I mean, one big question I always had is, how did I end up in elderly care? Because I actually had trained for a job in academia, and then somehow in 94, I was in a small care home, invited to help out a little bit, saw how the elderly were treated, and somehow it became a passion or a mission to build our own care homes. So this is my brother Ali with our grandfather. So it could also have to do with dad, I don't know. This is our dad, who is now 75, and basically his motto in life is, let's have a party. And so it may have something to do with that too. Here, this is a little dark, but this is actually part of our team. I wanted to give you a little bit of a, it's very informal. He is one of my brothers, Amir. There's Ali, he's scribbling away. Architecturally, there's our sister Elke, with her husband. This is Chad, who's our only non-family member in the company. He's actually Canadian with his wife, Amy. So we are, you know, we really have these get-togethers and we think or dream into what would we like to have happen in the care home. And of course, the question that we always ask, how would we like to be treated if we lived in a care home and we needed 24-hour care? Because I want to just emphasize again, we are mostly dealing with people who really need 24-hour care. There's also independent senior living, which may be a pre-stage, but we really deal with the last, I think our average is 4, 5, 6 years. Just press the button again, it should be a good number. Or maybe not. Oh, it's searching. Oh, there we go. Just, if you press again, it should come the next one. This is the official company photo, which we just took. So this is, Chad is again the only non-family member. Actually, he joined our team some 5, 6 years ago. He lived in an apartment I have and he couldn't pay the rent, so I put him to work. And that's Sister Elke. Amir is the youngest. He's actually interesting background also. Amir is actually in finance. Alid, all the way to the left, is a lawyer, and I'm somewhere in between. What we just, our little brother Amir, he came up with this wonderful little acronym, H-Song, because we became more and more interested in finding out what are actually our values that guide whatever it is we do. So he came up with this, and we all liked it. Added it a little bit and augmented it here and there. And there's a big debate right now going on in our company if spirit shouldn't be replaced with smile. But, you know, they, you know, anyway, those are the fun little discussions we have. What we have been wondering about is, well, if we are older and we are in a care home, and one of the first things that actually came in when you guys did the exercise just a few minutes ago, the first feeling I had for myself personally when I was imagining having dementia or forgetfulness symptoms is fear. Fear that I'm going to be in an environment where I will be treated not in a very caring and loving and accepting fashion. That's actually the first thing that comes to me. You know, out of whatever my personal psychology or whatever. But that is wow, because I have seen and see almost every week how people with the dementia are being treated, and much of it was alluded to already in the previous presentation by Stan, Tom, and Anne. Okay. So just to say, in a therapeutic environment, people feel safe and supported in living all the different dimensions of who they are, from their joys and pleasures to their illnesses and frailties. And you would like to pay, in a therapeutic environment, attention to the unique needs and subtle changes within our residents. So that's kind of the big goal that we have. And one of the ways that we would like to help do this is through these various programs. And this is really just about a year old. It has taken us a long time just to even conceptualize it. Just like when Tom was mentioning the 6 levels of forgetfulness, or what are the various issues still to be worked on. So here we just brought up various programs that would help a person, whether they are physically immobile or disabled or mentally challenged or have forgetfulness symptoms, and as you can see, we call it forgetfulness care. What would help them, what attitude would help them to still feel very much in communication with the rest of the world, if they desire to? Okay. So what actually happened some 10 years ago, we built Hayes Valley Care. It wasn't at that time an old dilapidated building in the center of town. At that time, the town was still very, was kind of still a pretty dangerous part of town. But then through the earthquake in 89, a freeway that had divided that neighborhood from the more, the nicer parts of town actually fell apart, and then this neighborhood, without us doing much to it, suddenly became a nice neighborhood. One of the unique aspects of that we wanted to emphasize immediately is this is quite a large building. We insisted on having a restaurant on the premises so that it would never be just an old care home. It would actually be a place that the public entered, and that also the residents themselves could meet the public, because many of our residents in this place, you could say 70-80%, this is a 47-bed facility, are wheelchair bound and would rarely leave the place other than if you brought them on an outing. So this, just taking an elevator, they could come down to the restaurant and interface with the public. This is a view from our new care home that we just built, which is Kitty Corner here, showing a little bit the whole stretch of the building. It was actually also a place that was used for a movie set in the 20s from Stroheim, for any movie buffs who know that. Okay. Just a little, this is half a block away, I wanted to give a little feeling of the neighborhood, because some of the residents actually are being wheeled by students and interns and volunteers and caregivers to some of the local cafes. This has just happened to be one of the cafes. There are about two, three cafes in the neighborhood, one a little bit one block away, the other one right around the corner from there. So it is a very, I think what I want to emphasize here is the communal aspect of not having a care home outside of the city, but rather really in the middle of all the life. How much life there is visible here. We are kind of right there in the center of town, so there's a lot of activity in this part of town. This was a few years ago, still valid today. And then we also are lucky that we have a Beta Breakers going right up that hill. Beta Breakers, for those who don't know, is a kind of like a city marathon that comes from one side of the city of San Francisco, from the bay, to the breakers, which is the ocean. So it's about a 10-mile run, which hardly anybody runs, only the first 20 maybe. The rest basically use it to have a big party. So there are people running by that are naked or mostly with kegs of beer, and there's an Irish contingency, etc., etc. So there's a lot of drinking going on, a lot of partying going on. And of course, the elderly love it, right? Because they are, as you can see, we wheel them out here, and then we hand them water and sometimes also other things. Yeah, it's a very Irish thing to do. This, I don't want to really go into what else we're handing out yet. There are also caregivers standing around. Here's another resident here. Many of these are caregivers that you see here and here. Okay? This is our caregivers up from upstairs, just from the rotunda. You always try to. Light is beautiful over the hill. Good luck from all of us. This goes right up the hill, right? Our building is right where it goes up. This is the new facility we just finished building. It's literally a month ago, a couple months ago. This is, so Hayes Valley Care sits right here. And this is now a 56-bed facility with a big rooftop garden. And I'll show you a little view. It's a very, very beautiful, very bright place. This is all glass here. And these are 12-foot ceilings. And this is a 20-foot lobby, actually, when you walk in. You'll see some pictures of that. This is the rooftop garden view, still under construction. For those who don't know, San Francisco is that icon of the Transamerica building. If we do maybe more, here's the Civic Center. Downtown financial area. So it's a very beautiful place to actually sit up there, and right here is where we will have the meditation and reflection room. This is how we basically do development. As you can see, it is measurement tape, and we're measuring how big table should be. We're not quite that organized yet, so. So this is the measuring by feet. It's also good when we don't have a measurement tape. Yeah, yes, I'm still working on that one. What we have done in the new building is the whole ground floor is now Zen Hospice. We've teamed up with Zen Hospice Project, which provides kind of a Buddhist approach to dying. So the you know, the whole, as some of you may know from the Buddhist philosophy, dying is not such a big deal. It's just a natural continuation, and you basically want to try to get people away from the panic that comes when people feel like they're in the last stages. So we have a lot of discharges from the hospitals when finally doctors decide to give up. And of course, as you know, that's a big issue is when does a doctor decide to say, I give up, which is mostly not. So, but we're working with them. So this is a, it gives the whole building a beautiful feel. You know, just, we just had our first two residents that were with us, hospice residents, for about 5 weeks, and one just died. Okay, this was the big, like, as you can see, just fresh off the press a couple months ago. Very wide lobby, lots of plants. Go on. We've got a famous representative visiting from Portland. Hey, why was it so quick? Dad, you have to do that back. You have to do that back. There we go. That's actually my mother. She was visiting from Germany as well. That was quick again. Just from the back. One thing that we have a lot of is we have a German caregiver volunteer. We are making use of the fact that we're in San Francisco. So we have quite a few international volunteers that are visiting our two facilities and often stay for a month or two, and they volunteer 30, 40 hours a week, and in exchange we provide them lodging and food. Okay. We just had an interfaith blessing of six different faiths. I think Vedanta is there, Buddhist, Zen Buddhism, and another Tibetan, I think. And also here is the Baptist minister, I think, down there. A rabbi and a Lutheran priest, which I think we have a picture of. Next one. This is a little courtyard in our back that she built a little bit in the Zen style with the bamboo, as you can see. Go on. A little, you know, we have a lot of parties, talk about parties. We have lots of them, which are really nice and community building. Here are some of the well, as you can see here, lots of different countries and cultures represented. One thing that we have done there that was created, I created this about 12, 13 years ago, which is the Pacific Institute. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Basically, those are, now we have something like 16 interns that are working in both facilities. They're providing what some would call geropsychological care, but it's really emotional counseling, and, you know, being present with the elderly and really working in activities one-on-one or in groups with, well, what are still the tasks left, the other tasks left, what is the unfinished business, or what, you know, what experiences are you still needing to have facilitated if you can. And that's the team. Here's Bogner, by the way. She's been a guest professor for a while. And Doris is our director there. Mm-hmm. Our director of both care homes with Brother Amir and two French students who actually came from the Parisian University, and they were with us for 3 months. Paris just developed a special master's program for people with mobility issues, just dealing with what can we do to help people with just maintaining a certain ability to either walk or even in a wheelchair to remain mobile. Very nice program. Lots of caregivers are with us. Those are the three caregivers that are also lead caregivers that help us also with the training. And they really feel part of this, of these organizations. Now with Zen Hospice, which is an independent organization, nonprofit organization, Pacific Institute, which is a nonprofit organization, and HSong, we have three companies, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff that I never thought about that happens or that needs to be worked on when you have three different companies. you know, that it's not quite as smooth as just if you're working for the same boss, so to speak. You know, so the dynamics are often quite amazing. And so we're finding that there's quite a bit of need to bring constantly these organizations together so that they don't forget that they really are there for the same purpose. Lots of activities that we have going on in either the courtyard here or in Hayes Valley Care. This is a favorite, our annual fashion show for the elderly. You can see some, they're made up, and it's wonderful to see how much they just love, you know, being made up and working on it. Sometimes takes 2-3 months just to, you know, the excitement of just looking forward to that day of making yourself pretty. Some of the artwork, actually one piece we're proud of, I think this one is hanging in the Smithsonian. So we have a program called Art with Elders. He's actually used to be a cartoonist, has been diagnosed with schizophrenia for 30 years, which I don't really see that well. But so this is still the creativity that's present, just some of these pieces that are present. Rosemary, actually, I showed this picture because she's such a wonderful, difficult resident. She's been with us for some 6-7 years. Basically, you've been a homeless person for most of her life. And she is every intern's big challenge in the beginning, because she's very demanding, and but also just very loving and very challenging, yes. This is Vivian. She's just going to be turning 102. Very classy woman, also an artist who has been with us almost since the very beginning. And here, just a few weeks ago, our first resident in the new building, sitting right there. And here, coming together very nice, a Pacific Institute intern who basically works for us a year or two. Catherine, the volunteer, and Carlos, who's actually on the Zen Hospice floor. So he's been diagnosed with less than 6 months to live. And this is our new project that we're going to do right across the street. This is the Laguna Grove Care, the one that I just showed you, which is here. Hayes Valley Care is right facing this building. And here on this new building, we would like to also bring together again hospice, assisted care, independent living perhaps on the top, but then with a large courtyard, and again lots of retail activity places, restaurant, cafes down below, a little art studio, so that, you know, you really have that element of life in this whole building. Mm-hmm. They're right across the street of one another. Basically here, this is maybe not more than 20, 30 feet. This is right across, this is the one that I just showed you. And he's got his on the other side of the street. So they're all just looking at each other, basically. Okay? So now, that's, how are we doing with time? Go ahead. Okay. I wanted to just show you briefly this is actually the beginning, as I mentioned, the second part of this slideshow, really in a sense of redefining what we meant by aging. And I liked this, as you can see, Rosemary is my favorite subject. But I think this was already mentioned earlier also in the first presentation. The way you treat the elderly today is the same way you will be treated when you grow old. And so this was part of our Pacific Institute idea of really helping people to become less anxious, fearful about aging. Nobody's on the phone, so I don't really have to read all of this, do you? No, this is actually a brochure. This is a brochure that we have distributed mostly in post offices, banks. You know, we actually made a Polish version of it too, using the same photos, but then translating the language, of course. I've been quite influenced by James Hillman, which probably some of you know. And Hillman talks about, this gives this beautiful story of of just imagining that when you start honking at that old person in front of you driving who's just going too slow or who takes 10 minutes to find a change at the cash register, to just quickly make that switch. You know, that's going to be you standing there one time. That's going to be you driving that car one time. So in some, and then the other point that he made, and I'd like to give him really credit for that, is that already as you are looking in the mirror every day and you greet yourself, in some way, if we can already make an attitude switch, that we begin to like how we are growing old, how we are maturing, then we will, so is his idea, and I do believe that, so we will be much more happy also as more mature people, because we are not having that built-in negativity towards age. You know, you're always welcoming it. So it's actually a process that happens from probably early on. Okay? Yeah, we know this. When you help an elder, you also help the part of yourself that will grow old. You know, that's for this community, of course, is probably some of the foundational precept that other part is in you. Okay? What's that quote? Go back. Uh-huh. Doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking like a fool for love, for your dreams, and for what you... Can you read Psalm 8? By the way, Chief Aliyah is actually not an old Native American elder. Rather, she is an author in her, I think in her 50s, a woman author living in Colorado. But when I first saw this quote, I just made up. I thought Chief Aliyah had to be, you know, Native American elder. So it turns out that she's alive and well and in her, whatever, 50s in Colorado writing books, you know, calling herself Chief Aliyah. So anyway. This is actually a fascinating story behind this picture. It's uncanny. It's an uncanny story. I just was in Tehran, in Iran, a couple years ago. So I'm walking in this city that has some 12, 13 million people living in it. And I'm taking pictures, being all just excited about how wonderful people are and so forth. And so I see these three guys sitting in a park. And take the photo, he got annoyed already, one in the middle, because I was on my 10th picture trying to really get the nice, you know, nice one. And then I bring the picture back, and my cousin, who is an architect, who helped us design Laguna Grove Care, saw this picture there and says, "Where did you take this picture?" And I said, "Oh, I took this in Tehran." And it turns out that this is her uncle. And it's just uncanny, out of 12 million people, for me, anyway. So this is the whole idea that, I mean, I love this part, actually. The, this is not the one that I thought about. Let's go to another one. This is something that still, as you can see, I'm still struggling with the fact that in so many of the care homes where we're dealing with dementia or with elderly, care has become quite mechanical, right? So how do we do that? Can we reconceptualize care again as something that is actually a service, like the Buddhists say, right? That you are in service of. So can you look at the other person, that the person whom you care is your emotional and spiritual teacher? Can you actually see if you can shift your attitude to that the person you care for is not just a task to be completed. Our emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are inseparable and must be cared for as a whole. Through our concern, we remember that our deepest need is as much to give as to receive care. And in caring for others, we experience our interconnectedness with all beings and keep the circle of care intact. This is actually what I was thinking about. I love this little, the way we put this together here with a lot of students' help. Elders may move slower, but they know better where they're going. Perhaps the decision-making appears slower, but those decisions feel wiser. Perhaps they think less quickly, but their thoughts are more insightful. Perhaps their eyesight is worse, but their vision is more profound. Perhaps their hearing is worse, but they know what is worth listening to. Perhaps they struggle more with modern technology, but they know more about the mystery of life. You know, just to help shift. By the way, I have some brochures for some of you who would like one. Communications art, this is already the beginnings of how I was, now in retrospect, I can see that in hindsight, of wanting to help our caregivers in the various care homes to practice a different kind of relating with the elderly. I mean, you see this a lot, you know. I mean, you see so much. I mean, this is really what they're talking about. You have talked about forgetfulness already, right? Try to understand their language, their questions, and their doubts. Can we listen? Can we learn to listen to the language of dementia again? That's actually what this is about, to some degree. This is, I don't know if you've been in care homes, but this is something you will see over and over again. People just want, you know, caregivers or others, because they're often so stressed, just, you know, not really being able to use their creativity very much. Or making it their problem. If they don't understand a sentence that you have just, you know, spoken, then it is your problem if you don't get it. So I'm going to keep repeating the same sentence until you get it, rather than me changing my wording. Don't deny emotions. I mean, this is all pretty clear for us who work in the psychology field or in the process work field. Again, this was for me much more of a pamphlet for the general public. Do not rush, asking questions. We of course do that from a process point of view. Am I speaking loudly enough, and so forth? Do not rush. In relationships with the elderly, slower means faster. If you're able to make a real connection, you save everyone unnecessary troubles. I find that again and again in working with the elderly to be true. Be content, enjoy when elders enter your life. Isn't that the truth? Okay? And then here, just, you know, some elders that are elders to me anyway, and everybody has their own. Somehow I like to be able to deal with those wrinkles, you know. What do you see? What can you learn from them? Okay? Eleanor Roosevelt. No, this is just a brochure. This is a little 8-page brochure. If you, it's in that bag, I can hand it out later on. Let me now get to, there we go. Now, it all kind of started with, let me just start with this here. Is that the first one? Yeah, I just wanted to as kind of a preamble, as an introduction to the forgetfulness care manual. This is a little example that Max actually used in a workshop once, and I love it so much. And if you imagine a child moving gently through a dining room and walking towards a cup of milk, but pausing to explore and discover objects lying on the dining room table and pictures on the wall, and perhaps forgetting or delaying her goal of reaching her milk, we might notice that this little girl's experience was enriched by the mere fact of observing and not marginalizing what surrounds her just because she had to meet her ultimate objective of reaching her milk. And to me, this is what I observe quite a bit with our elderly who have forgetfulness symptoms, right? They walk in a very different way, and I don't know what their goal is, but I need to always pay attention to the fact that I am very much goal-oriented. So what I do is very different in the way it is being perceived as what people who have forgetfulness symptoms have. Okay, one more. So this is what I'm saying. People with dementia act in similar ways. They inhabit dreamland and are not focused on consensus reality, as we heard already. Thus, their actions and experiences are not socially agreed upon and can be unexpected. These actions are not necessarily directed towards a clear outcome, and if they are, they may shift halfway through the action. Dreamland allows for actions to shift, feelings to unfold and be told, and fantasies to emerge and develop. Conversely, in our consensus reality world, we often marginalize fantasies, objects, subjects, thoughts, and emotions because we diligently move toward the achievement of our planned goals. This is how we measure success. This is how we perceive gain. And gain is italicized because the polar opposite to gain is loss. And of course, what so often is being said about dementia or forgetfulness is that that supposedly constitutes loss. Right? We are losing something. So if you're losing something, then the polar opposite of that must mean that we normally gain something in our regular world. Right? We are gaining, they are losing. So that, of course, I would like to start to turn around. How are you guys doing, by the way? Yeah, is the speed okay? Some refreshments? Okay. Could we get some refreshments? Cold beer? Can you guys do a little bit more? Yeah? Okay. So now the forgetfulness care manual, which is designed for caregivers in our care homes, specifically Laguna Grove Care, Hayes Valley Care. And both myself and Bogna, we have probably worked on this now for a year, year and a half. Some 6-7 months ago, I really wanted to create, you know, have something more with pictures. I actually had the idea of, you know, different people representing different aspects or different ways of approaching this whole phenomenon called dementia. And I'll introduce them. So here we have, I just make up these names, but Master Susushi, who's our process worker, our advanced process worker. I look at, by the way, can we get that a little bit more focused? Okay. So he says, I look at the world with peace in my heart, with curiosity and acceptance. I believe that everything that exists is important, meaningful, and needs our attention. I love being with all kinds of people, especially old people, and I see each behavior or symptom as an attempt to express our true nature. I find what people do fascinating, and I keep learning from them. A true process worker. Our medical doctor. I'm a medical doctor and specialize in Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. I'm checking the newest research, and I believe that once we understand the cause of these diseases, we will be able to find a cure for them. I'm interested in the brain and the effect of changes in the brain on human behavior. I believe in the scientific view of the world, science will help us to solve our problems. Sounds familiar. And then, of course, I'm thinking about all of our volunteers and interns and so forth, myself included. I'm a new trainee here. I would like to work with the elderly, but I see so many behaviors that are different from what I'm used to. I do not understand what some of the residents want. I do not know how to react and what to do. I'm a little anxious to start my work. And then we have the social worker who comes from more the psychosocial paradigm. I'm a social worker and just got my degree in social work and psychology. I think I said that because then you have the old foxes, they're just much more seasoned in some ways. It becomes more blurry, you know, they become process workers. I have a lot of information that helps me deal with people and their difficult behaviors in everyday life. I like knowledge that is practical. I'm interested in what works and what helps people adjust better to groups and to the society as a whole. So these four figures now appear throughout the manual and help position different voices each time. Because of course, as much as I'm very much biased against much of anything but Master Susushi and the trainee, I'm trying to not alienate people, because there, you know, a lot of people are coming in and they want to know about research, they want to know about the medical model, they want to know about the social work and psychology model. And I would like caregivers and interns and volunteers to know just some of the basic information that's out there. So this is how this manual is now divided. Basically, creating therapeutic communities, which I introduced a little bit earlier. Most important, join people where they are. And controlling frustration, especially the frustration that caregivers feel. One of the, if you work within an elderly care setting, or even if you work with, I've worked also with teenagers, so-called difficult teenagers. Frustration in you as a caregiver is really a dominant theme. How do I deal with all of the things that are coming to me? You know, I'm overworked, underpaid, work 10, 12, 15 hours, I'm constantly on call, and it's very, very hard many times for caregivers. So how do we help caregivers with that whole part? Understanding forgetfulness, which is basically our way of saying understanding dementia, understanding the world of forgetting, seeing it as another world, or as part of this world, but one that we don't really choose to explore much. There is mention made of just whatever we know right now medically about dementia. Different phases, different needs, this actually speaks to what Tom was talking about in the various levels, not quite as differentiated, by the way. That's beautiful the way you said that, Tom. I really like that. And then forgetfulness and medications. There's quite a few medications out there, and you know, I'm always thinking that somebody's going to ask us about what they do, and to some degree we need to also work with the family members who just insist that certain things are being done their way. So how do you balance all of that, right? You have a basic idea that this is meaningful, and yet you also have this attempt to do the best that you know of right now from a consensus reality point of view. And then directly the learning skills that are very, very important to us in HSOM. What can we concretely do in, what are some of the ideas that we have in communicating with the person with forgetfulness symptoms? How do we work with them? How do we even reconceptualize each event? And I often use the example of, you know, we have quite a few people that are incontinent, that need diaper changes constantly. So you can either do that with a task orientation, okay, I'm going to have to change your diaper now, Bill. And your goal is already the changing of the diaper. Or you approach that changing of the diaper with the attitude that this is now an experience, it's an event. And I actually had a very, you know, epiphanic, just a really deep experience with that when I just started working in that small little care home then. And I needed to change this maybe 85-year-old man's diapers. And as I was doing that, he was holding on in the bathroom to the bar, and I'm noticing I'm pulling down his pants to change the diaper, and I'm stopping for a moment and say, his name was Bob. Bob, this is probably pretty, I don't know what I said, but this must be pretty painful or something. And he had tears in his eyes and said, yes. And Bob was a policeman all his life, you know? I mean, proud, you know? And that was a deep moment for me, because it made me aware of just what it must be like to be the 85-year-old holding on while you have this young kid, basically me, pulling down his pants and changing the diaper. You know, so that's kind of the same situation also with forgetfulness. Working with challenging behaviors, as with the Pacific Institute interns, of course, we work with a lot of the, as you know, a lot of the other symptoms or conditions that come along with mostly what is called Alzheimer's. You know, we have aggressive types of Alzheimer's. We have people that are really intense. At least they appear to us that way. And how do we work with that? And then, of course, being with death, bereavement, and loss as just as important as when they are alive, because we still then work with the family members, but we also work with caregivers and interns and students and so forth that are very close to the people. Because one thing that happens when you start to change our attitude away from that this person is an object to be taken care of to a person that I'm intimately relating to, this is not just the last item in a manual. This becomes huge, huge. And I know for one that I often don't check in. I know when I walk, you know, our office is right by those two care homes, and almost every day I make a decision, do I now walk in and make contact again and check on Vivian, who's in the process of dying, for instance, who was looking through the window there, or do I not? And I know each time I have that feeling in my gut that it's just almost too painful to do that. So that's a hard one. I just want to give you, since we're, you know, just maybe a couple more minutes, just to give you a little flavor of this. And anybody who would be, has more interest in it, I can forward this. I have it digitally and so forth. I have a couple copies. But I just want to give you a flavor of that. So maybe we just go to the first. Okay. At the heart of our program lies a shift in understanding and approaching what is called dementia. Instead of using this often stigmatizing and demeaning label, we prefer to call dementia forgetfulness. I think that's already a big part of it, right? We're getting away from this disease model of dementia, which is, of course, as was already mentioned before, it's a ridiculous term. Because dementia basically means no mind or less mind. Well, for crying out loud, if only we knew what mind was. So we don't even know what the mind is, and we're already talking about no mind, right? I mean, this is just, you know, it's nuts from a, you know, I have a philosophy, anyway, philosophical issue there. From wrong to right, there's nothing wrong with people who forget. They are going through an important part of the life journey and try to communicate about their needs, feelings, and problems in their own way. And that should be underlined. In their own way. It's not my way, it's another person's way. Oops, we went to another slide. That's good. That's all right. Well, we all know this. This is, as you can see, this is process work all over. Disease concept to meaningful expression. Directing and controlling to serving and learning. This is what normally happens in most of the care homes. Well, hospitals, I mean, it goes on and on, right? It's directing and controlling. One of the issues, and I mentioned that, I think I mentioned first the Persian background. I don't know where it is from, but we really are trying hard to create a relaxed atmosphere. When you walk, so I hope anyway, when you walk into any of our care homes, I just want to be able to come down, you know? And I know that there are, you know, some places where you eat at 12 o'clock lunch, and you, by golly, will eat lunch. Well, I mean, I just put yourself in an 80, 90, 100-year-old frame of mind. You've struggled all your life, and now you have some 30, 40, 50-year-old person telling you you got to eat lunch at 12 o'clock. I mean, you might as well just push that cyanide capsule on your finger, right? I mean, it's just gets me a little upset. Anyway, to serving and learning. As people who work with residents, we are here to understand and serve a person rather than impose on residents what we think is right. I mean, that, of course, is at the core of probably, that's probably a world issue. And here's our trainee. So many people here seem to be confused or lost. They repeat the same thing, a walk without purpose, mumble rather than talk. Poor people, how can we help them? And this is, I think, what we're trying to do here in the Process Work Center as well. How can we find a way to facilitate? Can we find a way to educate without being top down? You know, because these are legitimate questions. This is the question that probably everyone in the world has, looking at the world and says, well, what can I do? Tell me, what is it that we need to do in order to be different? Attitudes. Well, these are the basic attitudes in Buddhism, process work. Openness, curiosity and acceptance, you know. And Master Susushi says it's so nice. There's nothing wrong with a person who forgets what we think is worth remembering. Now that is, to me, fascinating. There's nothing wrong with a person who forgets what we think is worth remembering. I often say to students, now, do you really think that remembering your name or my name, or remembering where the keys are, or to turn off the stove, are the things that make us truly human? Is that what our essence is of humanity? Remembering my name? Remembering his name? I mean, these are just, you know, what we think are important, all right? This is the primary identity stuff. They live in different realities, and thus they have much to teach us. And that's actually what I think is, for me, so fascinating, since I'm around them just about every day. I mean, I'm just more and more silly. I'm more and more stupid. I don't know if I want to bring in some of those funny hats I bought today, but I thought I was too much. But you know, you just feel much more free to be out there. Yeah. I mean, I know with us brothers and sisters and chat, you know, we always know a little. I mean, we always almost bring in just somebody's behavior that we found just really liberating. You know, we had this elderly person there one time who would always, the moment he heard somebody, would say, cookie, coffee. And so, you know, it's become part of us, right? And then he would say, or
hello, good morning.
Oh, there's Bogna. Hi, Bogna.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. I just probably will listen for a moment. I'll see how it is, and probably disturbing. Sorry for being late.
Actually, the timing is perfect, Bogna, because we're just talking about a few pages that we have time left to discuss of the forgetfulness care. I talked in the first mostly 50 minutes about what we kind of do in San Francisco, and then just the last 5 minutes we've been talking about the actual forgetfulness care manual that the two of us put together.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful, great. So I just, if I can still say one word, I just would like to thank Lee for announcing it, and thank Nada for introducing me to this field and for everything that he's doing there in San Francisco. It's just amazing.
Thanks, Bogna. Thank you for joining us. I know it's really early there. So it's nice to have you with us. This is Lee.
How are we doing? Shall we do another slide or two, or is this maybe good enough? Is there more interest? Yeah? Okay. So let's shift to the next. So practice, so how are we actually doing this? I don't know what page you're on, Bob, and I think you're on page 4 or 5 or 6. So here we are talking about really taking a look at the individualized care plans, really looking at who are these people that we are dealing with. Who are the people that are with us?